A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi, Herman and Corin. So in a number of episodes, we have covered the advent of the transformer architecture, which is the most pivotal step forward in AI capabilities, which took us from the pre-transformer era. And we mentioned BERT yesterday and BERT models, and suddenly made AI really, really impressive. And for anyone who's played around with some of the really early attempts at creating conversational language models, it's really instructive because it's a technology that isn't even recognizable as what we'd recognize as a chatbot or AI tool today. You might get that kind of first message, I'm a friendly AI, how are you doing, I'm here to help. And then you reach the point of incoherence in just a couple of turns. And you can find these prototypes on Hugging Face for anyone who's so motivated to see how quickly this has matured. Now, this is a topic that we've covered before, if not once before, maybe even twice. But when we think about how the transformer architecture has changed the world, I feel like it's justified. I was going to go back and see, did we do a dummies episode about how transformers work? But more presciently about how attention works and what that actually means. The immediate context for me asking this question is that I still feel like I'm lacking a simple or understandable mental model in my own brain to explain it. And when you don't have that, if you're asked to explain something to somebody else who isn't maybe immersed in the day-to-day technology, it's an impossible ask. So if you were to ask me, and I'm just kind of creating a hypothetical conversation here, I could say, well, the transformer architecture was based upon this famous paper, Attention is All You Need, and created this concept called the attention mechanism that allowed the model to fixate just upon the previous tokens, the next token, and basically allowed that process through which new tokens can be generated to be vastly more efficient. And of course, the obvious follow-ups, imagine you're talking to your dentist or someone who isn't in AI about this, is what's a token? And I think that's probably maybe where we can end the explanation. But we're talking about basically a vector space. The frame of reference that I use is that on the surface, AI models look like linguistic tools, right? It's in the name, large language models. And what's deceptive and important to understand about them is that under the hood, they're full of numbers. So if I were asked to explain basically what was the big deal about the transformer architecture and what does attention mean, I would say it's getting the model to, it's composed of all these weights, which are together trying to extrapolate patterns based upon knowing training data, and therefore synthesize the ability to actually think. And that in order for that computationally massively complicated process to work, the transformer architecture found a way to narrow the attention that it didn't have to process an entire text just to generate the next token. And that therefore, computationally, it became efficient on the hardware of the day for us to have chat conversations. That's about as far as my understanding really stretches at this time. I'd invite you to improve upon it. And for someone who wondered, how is it possible that one single advance spearheaded not just the rapid maturation in technology from conversational AI, but also for image to image, text to image, ASR for that matter, right? Converting phonetics into words. How is it possible that what seems like, I mean, on the surface, that seems like just a tweak. It doesn't seem like something that would turn the world upside down. And yet it did. Herman and Corin, let's take another go at explaining the transformer architecture and attention through a lens that can make sense to people.
Daniel sent us this one. and it's a big one. He's asking us to take another swing at explaining the Transformer architecture and attention. Not the academic version, but the version you could explain to someone who doesn't live in this world. His point, which I think is right, is that most of us have a fuzzy mental model. We know the paper. We know the phrase, attention is all you need. We know it changed everything. But if someone at a dinner party asks what actually happened under the hood, most people trail off somewhere around tokens and vector spaces. He wants us to fix that.
By the way, DeepSeek V4 Pro is writing our script today. So if the explanations land particularly well, credit where it's due.
All right. Let's start with what Daniel actually flagged. He said the Transformer took us from early conversational models that fell apart after two exchanges. Polite opening, then gibberish, to something that actually works. And he's right that those early prototypes are still up on Hugging Face if anyone wants to see how far we've come. But the deeper question is, how did one architectural change unlock not just better chatbots, but image generation, speech recognition, protein folding, all of it?
That's the part that genuinely rewards digging into. Because on the surface, the Transformer looks like an engineering optimization, a way to process text faster. And it was that. But the reason it generalized across modalities is that it accidentally captured something deeper about how information relates to itself. The attention mechanism isn't really about language, it's about context. And context turns out to be a universal problem.
Let's anchor this. The paper was Attention is All You Need, published in 2017 by 8 researchers at Google Brain and Google Research, Vaswani, Shazia, Palmer, Uskorit, Jones, Gomez, Kaiser, and Polosukhin. 8 names on a paper that, within a few years, had been cited over 100,000 times.
It's wild. And the title itself was a bit of a flex. Before Transformers, the state-of-the-art for sequence processing was recurrent neural networks, RNNs, and their fancier cousin, LSTMs, long short-term memory networks. These processed text sequentially, word by word, left to right. The hidden state from processing word 1 fed into processing word 2, which fed into word 3. It was like reading a sentence with a highlighter that could only move forward and could only see what it had already highlighted.
That sequential bottleneck was the whole problem. You couldn't parallelize training because each step depended on the previous step. But more importantly for quality, by the time you got to word 50 in a paragraph, the information from word 1 had been diluted through 49 steps of transformation. The model technically had access to it, but practically, it was a game of telephone.
The famous example from the pre-Transformer era was machine translation. You'd feed in an English sentence. The encoder would compress it into a fixed-length vector, a single bottleneck representation, and the decoder would try to reconstruct the target language from that. For short sentences, it worked okay. For long sentences, performance degraded sharply. The fixed-length vector just couldn't hold everything.
What did the Transformer actually change? Daniel mentioned the attention mechanism allowing the model to fixate on previous tokens and the next token. Let's unpack that, because I think this is where most explanations get fuzzy.
Let's build it from the ground up. The core innovation is something called self-attention. And the key insight is that instead of processing words in order, the Transformer looks at every word in relation to every other word simultaneously. When it's processing the sentence, "The cat sat on the mat because it was tired," it needs to figure out that it refers to cat and not mat. A recurrent network has to hope it remembers cat by the time it reaches it. The Transformer draws a direct line.
It does this for every word pair in the entire input. All at once.
All at once. And here's the concrete mechanism. For each word, well, each token, we'll get to tokens. The model computes 3 vectors, a query, a key, and a value. These are just lists of numbers. The query represents, what am I looking for? The key represents, what do I contain? The value represents, what information do I actually pass along if I'm relevant?
For the word it, in that sentence, the query vector is essentially asking, which other words in this sentence are relevant to resolving what I mean?
And the way it finds the answer is by computing a similarity score between its query and every other word's key. High similarity means high relevance. Those scores become attention weights. The value vectors from the most relevant words get combined, weighted by those attention scores, and that's what gets passed forward.
This is the part where I think the mental model usually breaks. People hear query, key, value, and think it sounds like a database lookup. It is, kind of. But the crucial thing is that these vectors are learned. The model isn't told what a query should look for. It discovers, through training on enormous amounts of text, what patterns of attention produce good predictions.
That's the magic. If you look at what different attention heads learn, and transformers have many attention heads running in parallel, each with their own query, key, and value projections, some heads learn to track pronoun references. Some learn to track syntactic structure, like subject-verb agreement. Some learn semantic relationships. A famous finding from analyzing trained transformers is that certain attention heads specialize in incredibly specific linguistic patterns.
There was that paper, I think it was from Anthropic, actually, where they found individual attention heads that would fire on specific syntactic constructions, like relative clauses or passive voice. Not because anyone programmed them to, because tracking those patterns helped predict the next token.
And that brings us to the next token prediction piece. Daniel mentioned that the transformer made the process of generating new tokens vastly more efficient. That's true, but the reason it's efficient is structural. In a transformer decoder, the kind used in GPT-style models, the attention is masked. When generating tokens, each position can only attend to itself and previous positions. It can't peek ahead. But within that constraint, it's still attending to all previous positions simultaneously.
Let's pause on that, because I think this is where the leap from better text processing to this changes everything becomes clear. The masked self-attention in a decoder means that when the model is generating token number 500, it has direct, unmediated access to token 1, token 47, token 212, all of them. Not a faded memory, a direct connection. Weighted by relevance.
The technical term for this is that attention creates shortcut paths through the sequence. In a recurrent network, information from position 1 to position 500 has to travel through 499 transformations. In a transformer, it's one hop. The path length is constant regardless of distance.
Which is why transformers don't have the same degradation on long sequences. But it's also why they scale so well with compute. The attention computation is a matrix multiplication. It's embarrassingly parallel. You can throw GPUs at it, and it just gets faster.
That's the hardware story, which is underappreciated. The transformer architecture was proposed at exactly the moment when GPUs were becoming widely available for training. The architecture's parallelism was a perfect match for the hardware. If transformers had been proposed in 2005, they might have been an academic curiosity. Instead, they landed right when the hardware could exploit them.
Okay, so we've got the mechanism. Every word, every token, looks at every other token, computes relevance scores, and combines information weighted by those scores. That's attention. But Daniel's hypothetical dinner party guest is going to ask the obvious follow-up. What's a token?
And this is where the surface-level name, large language model, becomes misleading. These models don't process words, they process tokens. A token is a chunk of text that's been assigned a numeric identifier. It might be a whole word like transformer. It might be a subword like trans and former split apart. It might be a single character. It might be punctuation or a space.
The tokenizer is a separate piece of the pipeline, and it's trained on its own. It learns a vocabulary of token fragments, typically somewhere between 30,000 and 100,000 of them, based on what fragments appear frequently in the training data. Common words get their own token. Rare words get split into smaller pieces.
The sentence, "The transformer changed AI might tokenize as Li, transform, changed AI," and each of those tokens maps to an integer. The model never sees text. It sees sequences of integers.
This is where Daniel's point about the deceptive surface hits home. The model looks like it's doing language. But every token is represented internally as an embedding, a vector, a list of numbers, typically hundreds or thousands of dimensions. The embedding for token 4512 doesn't contain the word itself. It contains a position in a high-dimensional space where tokens with similar meanings or usage patterns cluster together.
The embeddings are learned too. They're not handcrafted. During training, the model adjusts the embedding for each token based on how useful that embedding is for predicting the next token. Over time, tokens that appear in similar contexts drift toward similar positions in the embedding space.
When we talk about a model understanding language, what we really mean is that it has learned a mapping from tokens to points in a vector space, and that space encodes semantic and syntactic relationships. King minus man plus woman approximates queen. That was the famous result from earlier word embedding models like Word2Vec. Transformers took that idea and made it dynamic, context-dependent. The embedding for bank in Riverbank is different from bank in Savings Bank, because attention pulls in context from surrounding tokens.
This is the part that I think is beautiful. In a transformer, the representation of a token isn't static. It gets refined layer by layer. The input embedding is just the starting point. Each transformer layer applies self-attention, then a feed-forward network, and the token's representation becomes richer. It absorbs information from the tokens it attends to. By the final layer, the representation for a token encodes not just that token's meaning, but its role in the full context of the sequence.
Let's make that concrete. Take this sentence. She picked up the bat and swung it at the ball. The word bat starts as a generic embedding that could mean either the animal or the sports equipment. After the first attention layer, it's pulled in some context from nearby words. Picked up and swung are both relevant. After several layers, the representation has been refined. The animal meaning has been suppressed. The sports equipment meaning has been amplified. By the final layer, the vector for bat is functionally a different point in space than where it started.
The model learns to do this refinement entirely from the task of predicting the next token. There's no separate training signal for disambiguation. It just turns out that being good at next token prediction requires building these rich, context-sensitive representations.
This is where I think we can bridge to Daniel's other question. How did one advance, the transformer, unlock image generation, speech recognition, protein folding, all these seemingly unrelated domains?
Because attention is modality agnostic. The transformer doesn't care whether its input tokens represent words, image patches, audio spectrogram frames, or amino acid sequences. As long as you can chunk your data into discrete pieces and map each piece to an embedding vector, the attention mechanism works the same way.
Let's trace through a few of these. For images, vision transformers, or VITs, introduced in 2020, the trick is to split the image into fixed-size patches. A 224 by 224 pixel image might be split into a grid of 14 by 14 patches, each 16 by 16 pixels. Each patch gets flattened into a vector and projected into an embedding space. Then those patch embeddings get fed into a standard transformer, exactly as if they were word tokens.
It works astonishingly well. The transformer learns that certain patches attend to other patches. A patch showing part of a dog's ear attends to the patch showing the dog's eye, because those features are spatially and semantically related. The model doesn't know it's looking at a dog, it just learns that these patch relationships are useful for whatever task it's trained on, classification, object detection, eventually generation.
The same pattern holds for audio. A waveform gets converted to a spectrogram, a visual representation of frequency over time. That spectrogram gets chunked into patches. Patches become tokens. Tokens go through a transformer. The attention mechanism learns which frequency patterns at which time steps are relevant to each other.
Speech recognition, text-to-speech, music generation, all of them now use transformer architectures under the hood. Whisper from OpenAI is a transformer. The latest text-to-speech models are transformers. The architecture is the same. The only thing that changes is how you tokenize the input and what you ask the model to output.
Then there's the protein folding story, which is maybe the most dramatic example of cross-domain generalization. AlphaFold from DeepMind. The first version used a different architecture, but AlphaFold 2 and beyond are transformer-based. A protein is a sequence of amino acids. There are 20 standard amino acids. You can treat that sequence exactly like a sentence. Each amino acid gets an embedding. The transformer processes the sequence with self-attention. And the output is a prediction of the three-dimensional structure.
The attention mechanism turns out to be perfect for proteins, because which amino acids interact in the folded structure depends on long-range relationships in the sequence. Two amino acids that are far apart in the linear chain might end up adjacent in the folded protein. The Transformer's ability to draw direct connections between distant positions is exactly what you need.
AlphaFold didn't just work a little bit. It essentially solved the protein folding problem, which had been a grand challenge in biology for 50 years. The Transformer architecture, originally designed to translate between English and German, ended up predicting the structure of life's fundamental building blocks.
That's not an exaggeration. The CASP competition, Critical Assessment of Structure Prediction, has been running since 1994. For decades, the best methods scored around 30 to 50 on their accuracy metric. AlphaFold 2 scored above 90. The problem wasn't just incrementally improved, it was effectively solved.
Let's pull this together. The transformer architecture is, at its core, a mechanism for letting every element in a sequence directly interact with every other element, weighted by learned relevance. That's it. That's the big idea. Everything else, multi-head attention, layer normalization, residual connections, positional encoding, those are engineering details that make it work well at scale. But the conceptual core is, replace sequential processing with parallel, weighted context aggregation.
That conceptual core turned out to be what a huge range of problems were waiting for. Language, vision, audio, biology. They all involve sequences or collections of elements where the relationships between elements matter. The transformer is a relationship modeling machine.
Let's talk about positional encoding for a moment, because it's the one piece of the puzzle we haven't addressed, and it's where the architecture gets clever. If you process all tokens simultaneously, you lose information about order. The sentence, "The dog bit the man, and the man bit the dog," contain the same tokens. You need to tell the model which token came first.
The solution in the original transformer paper was to add sinusoidal positional encodings, patterns of sine and cosine waves at different frequencies, to the token embeddings before they enter the attention layers. Each position in the sequence gets a unique pattern. Position 1 has a different pattern than position 2, and the difference between adjacent positions is predictable in a way the model can learn to exploit.
It's an elegant hack. Rather than building order into the architecture, which would reintroduce sequential processing, they just painted the position onto the token before processing began. The attention mechanism can then learn to use those positional signals when relevance depends on proximity or order.
Later models have experimented with learned positional embeddings, where the position encoding is just another set of parameters. The model optimizes during training. Rotary position embeddings, RPE, have become standard in many recent models because they encode relative position in a way that's particularly well-suited to attention.
We've covered what the transformer is, how attention works, what tokens are, and why the architecture generalizes. I want to circle back to something Daniel said that I think is worth examining. He described the transformer as just a tweak that somehow turned the world upside down. I understand why it looks that way from the outside, but I think that framing undersells what actually happened.
It wasn't a tweak, it was a fundamental rethinking of how to process sequences. The recurrent neural network paradigm had been dominant for decades. People built entire careers on LSTMs and GRUs and bidirectional RNNs. The idea that you could just not do any of that, and instead let every element attend to every other element directly, was a conceptual break, not an incremental improvement.
The paper itself was initially rejected from at least one conference. The reviewers didn't see it as obviously superior. It took the empirical results, massive improvements in machine translation benchmarks, dramatically faster training times, to convince the field.
There's a lesson there about how innovation actually works. The transformer wasn't obvious in retrospect. It was counterintuitive at the time. The prevailing wisdom was that sequential processing was necessary for sequential data. The transformer showed that it wasn't, as long as you had a way to encode position and a mechanism to model relationships directly.
Let's talk about the scaling story, because it's part of why the transformer's impact has been so outsized. The architecture doesn't just work. The same basic design that powered BERT with 100 million parameters also powers models with hundreds of billions of parameters. The attention mechanism's computational complexity is quadratic in sequence length, which is a real limitation, and we're seeing lots of work on efficient attention variants. But the architecture itself doesn't hit fundamental walls as you add layers and parameters.
The scaling laws paper from OpenAI in 2020 showed that model performance improves predictably with more compute, more data, and more parameters. That predictability is not something every architecture offers. It meant that organizations could invest billions of dollars in training runs with reasonable confidence that the investment would pay off in capability improvements.
That predictability comes directly from the architecture's simplicity. There's no branching logic, no conditional computation. It's a stack of identical layers, each doing the same two operations, attention and feed forward, with the same dimensions. That uniformity makes it possible to parallelize across thousands of GPUs.
I want to add one more piece to Daniel's question about why this changed everything so fast. It's not just that the transformer works well, it's that the transformer produces representations that transfer. A model trained on internet-scale text doesn't just learn to predict the next token. It learns representations of language, reasoning patterns, factual knowledge, and even something that looks like world models. Those representations can then be fine-tuned for specific tasks with relatively little data.
The BERT moment in 2018 was when this became undeniable. BERT, bidirectional encoder representations from transformers, was pre-trained on a massive text corpus with a simple objective, predict masked words. Then it could be fine-tuned on 11 different NLP tasks and set new state-of-the-art results on all of them. Question answering, sentiment analysis, textual entailment. One pre-trained model, fine-tuned, beat task, specific architectures that had been hand-designed over years.
That's when the field really understood what they had. The pre-training plus fine-tuning paradigm meant that you could amortize the enormous cost of training across thousands of downstream applications, build one big model, let thousands of developers fine-tune it for their specific needs. The economics of that were transformative.
Which brings us to the present. The models we interact with today, the chatbots, the coding assistants, the image generators, they're all built on this foundation. The transformer is the engine. The scale is what makes the engine powerful. And the pre-training paradigm is what makes the power accessible.
Let me try to synthesize this into the kind of explanation Daniel was asking for. The kind you could give someone who isn't in AAI. Here's my attempt.
Go for it.
Imagine you're reading a complicated paragraph. Your brain doesn't process each word in strict sequence and then forget what came before. As you read, you're constantly referring back to earlier words to resolve references, to maintain context, to understand how ideas connect. The transformer does something similar. It looks at every word in relation to every other word all at once and decides which connections matter. It does this using a mathematical mechanism called attention, which computes a relevance score for every pair of words. Words that are highly relevant to each other share information. Words that aren't relevant don't. This happens in layers, over and over, so that by the end, each word's meaning has been enriched by everything around it. The model learns what counts as relevant by training on enormous amounts of text, predicting the next word over and over until the patterns crystallize.
That's good. I'd add one thing. The reason this works for images and audio and proteins is that words is a metaphor. The actual input is tokens, small chunks of whatever you're processing, and the model doesn't know or care whether those tokens represent text, image patches, or amino acids. It just learns which tokens should attend to which other tokens, and that turns out to be a surprisingly universal approach.
The reason it was such a leap forward is that before this, models process sequences one element at a time, which was slow and caused information to degrade over long distances. The transformer eliminated the distance problem and made parallel processing possible, which meant you could train much bigger models much faster. That combination, better quality, better scaling, is what unlocked everything.
I think that lands. It's not the full technical picture, but it captures the conceptual core in a way that doesn't require explaining matrix multiplication, or softmax, or multi-head splitting. And if the follow-up question is, but how does it actually know what's relevant? The answer is honest. It learns through trial and error, adjusting millions of parameters based on whether its predictions match reality.
That's the part I find humbling. We built an architecture. We didn't program what counts as relevant. We didn't encode rules about grammar or semantics or visual features. The model discovers those patterns through optimization. The attention patterns that emerge are not designed. They're discovered.
There's one more thread I want to pull before we wrap. Daniel mentioned that the Transformer enabled synthesizing the ability to think. That's a loaded phrase, and I think we should be precise about it. The Transformer does not think in any human sense. What it does is build representations that capture statistical regularities in its training data, and those representations turn out to support behaviors that look like reasoning when the scale is large enough.
The distinction matters. When a large language model solves a math problem, it's not doing what a human does, manipulating symbols according to logical rules. It's pattern matching against the vast space of problem-solution pairs it has seen during training. The representations are rich enough that this pattern matching often produces correct results, but the underlying mechanism is different from human reasoning.
Yet, the fact that pattern matching at scale can produce outputs that pass the bar exam, that write functional code, that translate between languages with nuance, that tells us something profound about how much of what we call intelligence is pattern recognition. The Transformer didn't just advance AI. It forced us to reconsider what intelligence consists of.
That's probably a whole separate episode, but it connects back to Daniel's core question. The Transformer matters not just because it works, but because it revealed something about the nature of language, knowledge, and maybe cognition itself. Context is everything. Relationships between elements carry more signal than the elements in isolation, and a simple mechanism for modeling those relationships, scaled up, can produce something that looks remarkably like understanding.
I think we've earned our dinner party explanation. Let's land this.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The national animal of Scotland is the unicorn. It has been since the 1200s, when it was adopted as a symbol of purity and power in Scottish heraldry, and it still appears on the royal coat of arms of the United Kingdom.
A nation whose national animal doesn't exist.
I respect it.
Here's the forward-looking thought. The Transformer architecture is now 8 years old. There's active research into what comes next. State-space models, mixture of experts, architectures that don't have the quadratic scaling problem. But the Transformer's core insight, that direct, learned relationships between elements speed sequential processing, seems likely to outlast any particular implementation. Whatever architecture dominates in 2030 will probably still have attention, like mechanisms at its heart.
The open question is whether the next leap will come from a fundamentally new architecture, or from scaling the Transformer even further, or from combining it with other approaches, like the neurosymbolic work that tries to integrate explicit reasoning with learned representations. My money is on hybrids, but I've been wrong before.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing, and to Daniel for the prompt. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back next week.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from law. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.